Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
My voice is naturally quite
I'm going to record
loud.
This because I'm fascinated. Tell me about this double fist technique.
Well, I was telling you about double fisting and then you turned on the recording. Classic Sarah. I was just saying that in voiceover you should be one fist away from the microphone, but that I like to do two fists because I have quite a booming Irish voice.
You've got to make the space.
Yeah, so that's what I was doing when you started recording, double fisting myself towards the microphone.
You said fisting, my hand crept towards the big red button in front of me, and I'm like, this must be recorded for posterity. Well, let's just get into it, shall we?
Classic Morgan.
Hello and welcome to The Fear, a podcast about the overlap between comedy and horror. My name is Sarah Morgan. Hello. Every episode of The Fear, I ask my guests to bring in three things: a fear from their childhood, their favourite scary moment from film or TV, and a fear or phobia they live with now. We will unpack these in a judgment-free environment and hopefully come to the conclusion that everyone is scared of something at the moment. I am scared of everything. Are you also scared of everything, Bonner C. Titley?
Boner C. Titley. Well, you gave me a new nickname.
Right?
It was the fisting intro that made you call me Boner. And I'm
most
into it.
Basic bitch error of all time, getting an Irish woman's name wrong in an intro, and I'm going to have to leave this in now.
Yeah, you have to.
I'll tweet about it otherwise. I did my worst fear. My worst fear, imagine.
So it's not pronounced boner, it's pronounced Brona, and it's weirdly spelt Brona as well, but thank you for giving me a cool new nickname.
Brona C. Titley.
Am I scared of everything? No, I'm not.
You're not?
Yeah, so
okay, I love you and tell me your secrets.
I still think I'll be a delightful guest for your podcast about fear. But I'm a fairly rational person, right. And I think that the things that people are scared of, like mice or spiders or shit like that, I go towards, and I'll be the person who will get the mice or the spider,
Oh yeah,
that's how you pronounce spider, by the way.
Sure.
It's spider.
No, I love spiders.
Out of the room. And I remember being, I was like snorkeling on the Great Barrier Reef, holiday name drop, and somebody like screamed that there was a shark, and loads of people screamed, and then I put my head in the water and started swimming towards the shark, because I was like, when am I going to see a shark? That sounds amazing. Because I have always had this sort of innocent, the world is a brilliant place kind of attitude towards everything. But then when you actually asked me to think of my fears for this podcast, I started to list them down. I was like, oh, there have been some quite irrational ones for a rational person to be, for someone who thinks they're quite rational to be scared of.
Interesting. For the listener at home, you probably know Brona from every TV show that you enjoy watching. She's probably written on or been in. Just look her up on IMDb. You'll find her.
Don't do an intro. Just let them Google.
Oh, I'm just going
to...
Just
get the listeners to do the work.
Of the stuff you've been. Reluctant Landlord. You've been in... You've written on... Most of the shows I've written on, weirdly.
That's
at different
true,
times, obviously.
Which is definitely all of the shows.
Yes, they will never...
You're like a show slut. I don't mean to slut shame you, man. Or should shame you, indeed. I've lost the ability to say words since you pronounce Brona as boner.
I mean, I'm just sort of speechless at having being so called out of being a show slut.
Yeah.
Which makes it like a show pony.
Yeah.
Or like a show dog.
Yes.
Like I'm really
true.
Good at being a slut.
Yeah.
I must be paraded around
you must
for my
be.
Efforts. Yeah, I'll take it. Sure, why not? Yeah, we are both quite show slutty. Although yeah. I think we probably have about the normal hit rate of an average male comedy writer.
I think it's probably that sense of like it definitely took me a few years to consistently knock on the door of the industry and be like, hello, how are you? Would you like me to write some jokes for you? Hello, how are you?
Yeah.
Over and over. But I think it is that thing of once you do one or two shows, then people like to hire the same people over again because they know them and they don't have to learn another Irish name.
But I think what the listener might know you best for is when you killed all men being in comedy ever again.
Oh, thank you
that
so much for bringing that up.
Yeah.
No, what happened was I just actively appointed myself as queen warrior of keeping all men out of comedy forever.
Yeah, I think you were wise to. Yeah, and someone had to.
Yeah, and so I definitely did that as a thing and then I was just really glad that that turned into a national news story.
Yeah. You were you were like a scandal for a day. You were like the woman who put a cat in a bin.
So fun.
For the listener who missed this because they weren't on Twitter every second in their lives, like I might be. It's really healthy. It was genuinely a thing happened to my friend.
Boner C. Tiddly.
Boner C. Tiddly. Didn't even hit the obvious rude bit of your name. I've never asked what the C stands for.
Oh, it's a whole thing.
It's absolutely fine. I'm never going to ask. I know what I think it stands for.
Cunnilingus. It's like,
I sit down for that.
Wow. I mean, we should just end there.
We punched up a joke together.
You were explaining.
I was explaining
why I was enemy to all men.
You are the shrill face of stamping out any male ambition of getting into comedy ever. So genuinely, what happened? You were on a panel.
So basically, what happened was that lovely commissioner at ITV Comedy called Saskia Schuster asked me if I would speak with her for a couple of minutes at a Channel 4 diversity panel about specifically women in writers' rooms and being both a woman and a writers' room slut, as we've covered.
Sure.
I felt, well, I am actually qualified to do that. Yeah. Also Saskia is very lovely and also she's the commissioner of comedy, so you would sort of do a favour for the comedy commissioner if they asked you, unless you were completely thick.
Yeah.
And so Saskia and I got the train to Bradford. We did a very short panel to a very small room about an initiative that Saskia has launched at ITV called Comedy 50-50, which simply aims to get more women into writers' rooms.
Literally 50% of a writer's room should be.
Sure, but that's also that's the lofty aim. In the meantime, there's a lot of grunt work to be done of just sort of like getting some in there. So then we joked all the way back from Bradford to London about how we really changed their lives with this panel. That was quite the experience we gave everyone in the room because it had been a very low-key event. And then the next day I had a Black Mirror moment where I woke up to like a friend like screen grabbing an article on The Guardian and a friend screen grabbing BBC News and then Chortle and then the British Comedy Guide and then later in the day Variety and The Hollywood Reporter. Oh. And basically every news, BBC News ran at first and they went with the very inflammatory headline, ITV bans all male writing teams.
Yeah.
Which is, factually incorrect and also sensational and designed to get you to click.
Exactly. Even though horrible clickbait headline.
Exactly.
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah, even though they're not sort of respecting the nuance of the story or the initiative in any way.
Well, I mean, that's not like the news to do that.
It's so weird,
Interesting.
Sarah.
Interesting.
It's really weird.
It's not like a desperate news organisation to write a deliberately misleading clickbaity headline to get people angry on purpose.
I know. Super strange. I don't think it'll take off.
No.
Anyway, but weirdly, they had used my name. They'd used a photo of me.
Really big photo.
I'm an attractive girl, but I look like
beautiful.
A troll in the photo.
Like a woman talking into a microphone.
It was from an award ceremony in New York in 2013 where I was like, your face is distorted with the desire to make a joke. And I looked hideous. Anyway, ego aside. So they'd used my name, my photo, tweets. They had like gone through my Twitter account and then anything funny funny that I had said about being a female writer they had put in there, and then quotes from the panel, which were, you know, which were fine because I had said them, but they were also taken out of context.
Yeah.
And so then what followed, as you can imagine, was just a, like, you know,
this
trolling online of everybody telling me that I was, you know, was I proud of myself for keeping all men out of comedy? You know, did I know I was just there to tick a box? Like, you know, and it was sort of like, I've been doing this job for now for full, you know, almost full time for about 6 years. And it's sort of like that was just one day at work.
Yeah.
And then to wake up to be in a national scandal for no reason was just so weird.
I know. I mean, this is, you know, I know it's kind of funny, but also like I was so genuinely, my heart was just ran chill for my friend who was like this giant picture of her face.
It was very poster
this,
girl.
This woman, for some reason,
this woman will keep your male ambition in the box it belongs.
She's taking your job. What was the Gal Qaeda? Hashtag Gal Qaeda was one.
There
of
was
the,
one but anyway, the nice thing was that I got to write a Guardian response article and completely take the piss out of the whole situation and the trolling that followed and everything. And so that felt nice because I had my voice. Because this had happened without me having any say in it.
Yeah.
Like, nobody asked me.
That's what I thought. It's so intrusive and so unexpected.
Like, nobody, like, asked me if they could use my name or my tweets or my photo or my credits. And so that was very strange. So it was good to be able to add my voice to the fray.
Yeah,
which was
your article was brilliant and really funny and really measured.
Thank you, Sarah
Morgan. And doing the opposite of what I think a lot of people were doing then, which is going like, because all male writers' rooms are awful. They're feral monsters and they need a woman throwing to them to calm them down, like a goat being thrown to a velociraptor. And it's like, no!
Sure. Yeah, I mean, no one was saying anything that was being said by the trolls online. Like, the initiative is very simple, and you can't really argue with the fact that, like, comedy is better if there's a few more diverse voices.
Yeah,
and if you do argue with that, well, then just go argue with yourself for the rest of your life. And it's not to say that, like, some men can't write great female characters and some women can't write comedy that men will enjoy. Yeah. Obviously, all of that is true.
Yes.
You know, we're not oversimplifying that I can only write for women and et cetera. It's just that, like, the diversity of voice means that you're getting more experiences, which means that you're getting different types of stories, character, comedy, conflict, and it's just better. It's just more exciting. But obviously the clickbaity part of that is Bronacy Titley will not allow men to be funny ever again.
Were you scared? Was it?
No, I found it extremely amusing at first because then it was just the ego thing of, like, could they not have used a nice photo?
No.
And could they not have asked me and I could say, have said a quote that would, you know, contextualize this story?
Yeah.
But then it was actually fine because I enjoyed the fact that they got it so wrong. Well, what felt dirty was that I knew every person that I worked with in comedy was going to read that story. Because if you work in comedy and you see the headline, ITV bans all male comedy teams, you will go, ooh, what's this?
Yeah.
And then so for them to click on that and then see my, like demented face staring back at them saying, Brona's keeping all men out of comedy. It was just like, I was mortified about that.
Did all the men have a problem with it? Or
do you know, I don't...
Not all the men.
I have to say that a lot of male writers were really supportive online and sent loads of private messages and public messages saying this is silly, like, you know, come on. So that was actually nice, especially when, you know, half of them were people who've shouted over me in writers' rooms. Just a little guy there for Sarah Morgan.
They know which side their bread's
buttered. They know who they are.
Yes, let's move on.
What's your podcast about?
It's just sort of having a bitch about work, really. So let's talk about your choices. All you said to me was, it's an episode of The X-Files and it's called Hell Money.
Friday.
Pre-minute alive? What a way to go.
A mysterious ritual will decide who lives.
They're playing some kind of game.
And who dies.
Come to you!
Something bad is coming.
A brand new X-Files.
Death is nothing to be feared.
Friday at 9, 8 central.
Yeah, so it's season 3, episode 19. And I rewatched it at the weekend because I, as well as bringing chocolates, I'm very professional in my preparation. Thanks, mate. And I felt a bit sick before I watched it. And then I felt like nervous the whole time. And then it took me half an hour to an hour to like shake it out of my body after
I
watched it.
Thank
you. Should be. It's pure torture. But it's so weird because this in no way has any impact on my life. But it absolutely scarred me when I saw it as a child. So it was season 3 of The X-Files, which must have been about 96. So I was about 13 or 14 when I saw it. And basically, like the upshot of it is, like the premise is that Mulder and Scully investigate a bunch of very suspicious deaths in Chinatown in San Francisco in the 1990s. And they seem to be mostly deaths of the deaths of, adult Chinese men who are being burned alive or buried in other people's graves, and they're missing eyes and various organs, and then inside their dead body has been sewn a live frog.
This is what I was going to ask, except I watched this, and it's a really strange X-Files episode.
It's really strange.
Oh, I'm so sorry, love. You're on edge. I'm going to summarize it for the listener. It's a strange X-Files episode because Mulder and Scully are barely in it.
Yeah.
It's all set in China.
Do you think so?
They're not really. I mean, they do nothing for the plot. There's no.
Sure.
They might. If they weren't there, it would still be an episode of X-Files with a Chinese detective investigating a case in China.
It's hot, by the way.
Hot Chinese detective. It's dated badly, I'll say.
Okay, interesting.
There's some moments of, and the special effects are great. The scares are great. Like, it's genuinely scary premise. Really love all that. Love all is this paranormal? And then actually being the thing that's going on is way
people.
Worse than ghosts.
Yeah.
So I love it.
Yeah.
The real monster is man. My favorite kind of
which
scare.
Which should have been the alternative tagline of The X-Files was like, however many seasons, the real monster is man.
Yeah, it turns out it was humans again. Ugh.
So should I just explain what is going on, because the thing that freaked me out, because as you said, it's a scary premise. Mm. It was honest to God the premise that stayed with me for my entire life since the age of 14 till now, because essentially the deaths were coming from, it is revealed, Mulder and Scully and the eventually find out that that newly arrived immigrants from China into Chinatown, mostly these adult Chinese men, are struggling financially, have been so poor that they've decided to enter this underground lottery. God, it upsets me so much, but I'm going to get through this because the listener deserves to know. So they've entered this underground lottery whereby they pay a subscription to go to the lottery, and they enter a big bowl with a chip with their name on it. And if their name gets pulled out, then they either win $2 million or a huge, life-changing, unbelievable amount of money, or they, or they have to give up an organ, numerous organs, or literally all of their organs. So it's like, so if your name gets pulled out, you could win, but then the next moment you'll find out if you win or if you're giving up an eye, a kidney, part of your liver, or, and there's one chip in there for death, which means just all of the organs.
Just all of the organs.
Yeah, and then they're being sold on the black market and you get burned in an oven. And the thing I was saying at the start about, like, I'm quite a rational person, I'm not too afraid of irrational things, nothing could be less prevalent into my life than, you know, a fictitious underground lottery that affected Chinese men in San Francisco in the 90s. And yet, I never have experienced anything that terrified me to my very core more than the idea that these people were so poor and desperate for money that they would play a lottery with their organs. It just upsets me so much.
I'm so... Thank you for summarising that so beautifully and so, and God, you've got tears in your eyes, and I'm so sorry I put
horrendous.
You through this. It is horrendous.
Just horrendous.
There's so many, I wasn't sure which, if there was a particular moment.
No. The
from
concept.
It because it starts with someone being burnt alive,
which I'm fine with,
in an oven. It ends, spoiler alert, with someone being burnt alive, and there's a bit where
doesn't
a
bother me.
Frog crawls out of someone's innards.
Hello,
which
Mr.
scared
Froggy.
The shit out of me. It was great, but. No, I mean, I love, because as well, the whole sort of bit about it being about Chinese immigrants and it's very othering towards the Chinese, let's
it is.
Say.
That's
in
the bit
a way
that doesn't age well at
there
all.
There was clearly no Chinese people in the writer's room.
Yeah,
there's a
yeah.
really awkward bit where the old Chinese man, who's desperate for money, he sold an eye.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost an eye. I'm so sorry.
He lost an eye in the lottery.
He's lost an eye in the lottery. is having a conversation with his daughter, who's very sick. She's got that kind of thing, that non-specific disease that people have in things.
Yeah, she is not long for this world.
They're in bed and they cough a bit. Yeah. But she's played by Lucy Liu, which is mad.
You think of Lucy Liu's later work, where she was so badass, and she's just the sort of like weak, dying, fragile girl.
Like a little doll in bed with the covers pulled up. And they have this conversation that's so awkwardly written, that it's written in the way that a Chinese character in something will talk if English isn't their first language. So even though they're two Chinese people having a conversation in Cantonese, and the subtitle, their subtitles,
and your Cantonese is excellent,
and my Cantonese is bullshit, I'm sure, but the conversation they're having is as though they are talking to an English person in English. So the captions are like, me must go out for business now.
Yeah.
Get medicine, make you better. And it's like, they're not.
Like when I was a child, I thought that the unspoken sexual tension between Mulder and Scully was done so well. And when I rewatched it now, I was like, oh God, it's so hokey and on the nose.
Do they just keep like sucking pen? I was never massively X-Filesy. I'm a little tiny bit older than you.
Yes.
And I think I was.
Decade, is it?
Just
oh, that was so cheeky.
What do you call me? Is that how you say it? Love, beautiful accent.
Boner.
Hey, Boner. Thanks, Boner.
I agree that it's aged really badly, but there was a scene where they tried to address that, where a Chinese American detective took
BD Wong
and he's super fit, and that was an interesting revelation as well, was that I don't fancy young Gillian Anderson, but I fancy her now that she's 50.
She's aged well.
I'd throw that in.
Also, there was a weird thing where detective women in the 90s had to dress like little old ladies, so she's always wearing like these sort of like Laura Ashley suits and very high necks, very stiff, and so she was supposed to be sort of bubbling over with repressed sexuality, but she just looked really.
Is that what it was?
I feel like I was watching that episode. I was
going, "What her cardigan was saying?"
God, her clothes are fucking horrible. These boxy jackets from Dorothy Perkins.
So they tried. So he tried to call them on the fact that they were that they were othering his community, and that and they were suspicious of him because he was part of the community, but then in the end he was part of the scam, so
it didn't really work. And then he gets put in a fire at the end.
The whole thing has aged badly, except for the concept that you would play a lottery with your organs, which I still find extremely terrifying, and I hope will never affect my life, but it still just freaks the shit out of me.
The idea that you could one day be so poor as to have nothing left to sell but your body, I think is a fear that runs through any decent person.
Is it though? Do they think about it, or is it just specifically me? Because I watched that episode in the 90s and then never forgot.
I've certainly, had periods in my life when I've had nothing but my smarts, and I could sell my hair like in Les Mis. And then when did you get
just walking the streets, going, "Anyone want a one-liner? Anyone need a welcome? This is the show that XXX." Welcome back from the break, etc.
I just love the idea of hustling on street corners. All right, mister.
Need me to gag up your best man speech?
Looking for a punchline?
Got an anniversary coming up. Everyone loves a funny man. No need to tell them it was from me. It's good to know we have that in our
gag
future.
Gag horse. I love our
gag. Did we just come up with a sitcom? Gag horse?
Okay, so that episode of The X-Files is horrifying.
Yeah, and I genuinely, I'm repeating myself now, but I cannot think of any other single event in TV or film that stayed with me my entire life and freaked me out to the extent that rewatching it made me feel physically sick.
And is that
so weird?
Do you remember when you watched it and how you felt afterwards and what you did?
I think I definitely would have watched it with my sister Aoife, who was a big X-Files fan, and ultimately I think I only ever watched it because are you thinking about how you spell Aoife?
No.
Your eyes just glazed over with fear when I said Aoife.
Stop it!
So Aoife, she knew how much it freaked me out, and then she really enjoyed making jokes about me waking up in a bath of ice for the last kind of 20
oh,
years.
Oh, brilliant.
And to the extent that I texted her at the weekend and I was like, I'm doing a podcast about things I'm afraid of. I will pay you money if you can remember the one that I'm going to think about. Mm. And she got it wrong first, but second she said the X-Files episode with
Amazing.
The organs.
So she just spent the whole of your childhood tormenting you
yeah,
about
completely.
Baths of ice and donor cards.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. I mean, we have a dark gallows sense of humour between the two of us, and we would always sort of do little pranks on each other that freaked each other out. And that
what's
kind
the
of
worst?
Thing.
What's the worst thing she's ever done to you?
Oh, good question. Well, this isn't the worst thing, but it was pretty funny. But I was home in my parents' house having a bath a few years ago, and before she knew I was about to have a bath, so she cleared all of the cosmetic products out of the bathroom except for the dog shampoo. But over the picture of the dog, she put a sticker saying real nice human shampoo.
Oh, she's brilliant.
I did a shoot once where they put so much hairspray in my hair, the next day I had to cut a chunk of my hair off rather than, because it just wouldn't wash out. So I put it in an envelope and posted it to her with no note. Just a chunk of your sister's hair. Anyway, we love each other. But yeah, so I would have watched it with her and was definitely freaked out, and she knew and held it over me for a long time.
That's fabulous. So really your biggest fear is not this moment from the X-Files, but your sister.
Yes.
I'm glad
oh
we got
God,
there.
Oh my God, this is
end.
Better than therapy.
I'm glad
Are
we
you
got there.
80 pounds an hour.
I think we've already established my rate.
Yeah. One box of chocolate covered pralines.
My mate bought a toaster. We go through celebrities' Amazon purchase histories so you don't have to keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring
yeah,
and fridge
that.
Magnets.
Yeah, I love that.
The G-spot.
The good vibrations, guys.
Green dot laser sight rifle gun scope.
I've bought that quite a lot of times, I think.
Right, okay. The sex doctor's guide to keeping it hot.
Ah, oh, interesting.
Did another child come along 9 months later?
Yeah.
Loads of great eps up now, and new ones dropping every Monday. That's My Mate Bought a Toaster from Great Big Al.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Moving on,
sure.
From your favourite scary moment from TV, but I think we're still very much staying in the realm of your childhood.
Great.
Which is Aoife has a child. Now you said two things, and I don't know which order we're going to do these in or
sure.
what you want to say. But you said Rhodes,
yes,
and Stephen King's Misery.
Oh my God!
So we've done the film,
so good.
TV,
yeah.
TV, but
so Rhodes is not so funny because I was hit by a car.
Oh fuck! Okay. Can we go back and talk about the nice horror book? No.
Yeah. No. We will.
No. Let's talk about. No.
So
please tell me.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny just because it is extremely rational. So so I was hit by a car when I was 13, put an end to my professional tennis career. That I did not have before the accident, but like to think I would. And so just kind of broke my ankle on a growth bone, which meant that the injury stayed with me for quite a few years after the accident. But it had the effect on me, which was that I was just very scared of crossing roads without the traffic lights, as you would be. But it was so funny because when you're a teenager,
I mean, it sounds funny.
Yeah, it's all about just like tearing about town. So my friends would be tearing about town, and I would, even if there wasn't a car on the road, I would press the button, stand there, wait for the green man, and then when the green man had come, then I would cross the road. And I'm talking no matter what or when, just constantly was a slave to the green man. And I'd still would be fairly conservative in how I cross roads now. So it's not that funny, really. It's just a trauma.
No, it is. I mean, this is, it's really funny the way that I do already rationally with this thing, this terrible thing that happened to me. So was it an accident?
Yeah, so I was on the way back from Mass with my family, as all good Irish stories start. Yeah, sure. And I kept my parents parked across the road from my house, or my dad parked across the road from the house, and I had to run in and get something or tell someone something, or like we weren't all in the car, and I think there might have been a friend of mine had come with us, you know, just the social outing. Yeah. Let's go to Mass together. It's better than the cinema. But we lived on this, this is like a dual carriageway and then an inner slip road where we would play, but there was also a GAA pitch across the road, which is where clubs play football. Mm-hmm. And there was a match on, so there was cars parked, just double parked on both sides of both those streets. Mm-hmm. So there was sort of, so I looked up and down the road and didn't see any moving cars, but because the, you know, my vision was so impaired by all the other cars, and and then a car came along, hit me, and I was so embarrassed because my family were watching from the car. So I was so embarrassed that I had been stupid enough to be hit by a car, even though it wasn't my fault objectively. I stood up and walked away on a broken ankle and was like, God. I'm fine. And then wasn't
That's
fine.
That's kind of the most you story I've ever heard. I just need to reassure everyone that I'm all right by walking off.
I'm worried about how you are because you saw me get hit by a car.
Is your car all right? Are you okay? Because that paint looks tricky to match.
It's true.
How was the driver? Who was the driver?
Well, he lived down the road.
Can I kill them?
I mean, we later took him to court, so good. I'm not sure how much I should revisit on this very public forum.
Yeah, let's.
I think
maybe
we
move away. Yeah, sure. Okay.
But I'm fine, except I'm not Serena Williams, which was a real, aim of my childhood.
But now you're bonusy titters.
Bonusy titters. And that's much better.
Are you still sort of anxious around traffic now? No, you live in London. That's kind of.
I still am a bit of a whore for the green man. I think it's just if we're running with that.
Sure. I mean, we'll keep dragging it back to sex work.
It's true.
It's like better and better.
Yeah, no, I am. I'd say so. Yeah, I'm not so bad anymore. Like, if there's absolutely no cars. Mm. Oh, I tell you what I'm really bad at is walking country roads where there's no pavement, which I inevitably do with my partner who's from the Lake District. Right. And so if a car comes, I sort of freak out like a little squirrel and don't know where to stand, which is the worst thing you can do when a car is coming. You need to sort of be visible in one spot.
I always forget which one you're meant to do. Is it
or with?
No, I grew up in the countryside. I have no idea. And if I get anywhere where the pavement disappears, and I'm just like, ah.
Yeah, I don't think pavement should disappear. I think we should live in a world with pavement. There, I've said it.
Yeah. No, the countryside's awful. Fucking hate it. Oh, God. I'm so sorry that happened.
And thanks, mate. You see, it was less traumatic than when I woke up being the face of keeping men out of country.
Was it? Genuinely?
No, it was worse.
Okay, good. Let's briefly talk about Misery, though, because
it's just a scene in particular. So
this is the film?
Book. Yeah, okay. So I'd read the book and I loved the book and I loved reading books as a kid. Mm. And I got a thrill from the book, but I don't think I was scared. Mm. But Kathy Bates' performance in Misery was so terrifying. But it was the scene where what's called the hobbling scene, and I rewatched it on YouTube again just because I'm such a good guest. And basically, Kathy Bates has been holding the writer in her house where she wants to keep him forever, whether he wants to or not. He's recuperating from an accident. I'm sure everyone knows Misery. Mm-hmm. But he has realized she's trying to keep him there, has gotten out of the room, the locked room, with a little pin, and is planning his escape. Yeah.
Misery is such a great story.
So the hobbling scene starts with he just wakes up in the middle of the night. Like he just kind of flickers open his eyes, happens to wake up, and then she's there, terrifying. And then she says, "I know you've been out, Paul." And Paul's like, "What? No, I haven't. What are you talking about? I love it here in the bed." And then she says a sentence that, again, stayed with me forever, which is like, "My little ceramic penguin in the study always faces due south," because he had knocked the penguin when he was out.
That's where it's colder.
And then she goes on to say, she tells him the story of some mine.
"Paul, do you know about the early days at the Kimberley diamond mines? Do you know what they did to the native workers who stole diamonds? Don't worry, they didn't kill them. That would be like junking your Mercedes just because it had a broken spring. No, if they caught them, they had to make sure they could go on working, but they also had to make sure they could never run away. The operation was called hobbling."
"Danny, whatever you think I'm not doing, please don't do it. Danny, for God's..."
"Shh, darling. Trust me.
God's sake.
It's for the best."
"Danny, please!"
Where the workers would try to escape with the diamonds, so the people who owned the mine wanted to keep them there, but also needed to make sure that they would work. And then she's holding up a big sledgehammer and she's like, "It was a process called hobbling." Mm-hmm. And then she starts like putting a wooden block between his feet and he's just like, "No." And then she swings an axe at his foot, at one of his feet, and then goes, "Nearly there." And then swings an axe at the other foot and then is like, "I love you, Paul." It was just so powerful and incredible because she wasn't like your average kind of scary villain. She was this, she was a nurse. She was cheerful and
such
homely.
A brilliant villain.
And it was such a brilliant villain. Yeah. And she was a nice woman
who liked books.
She was kind, she was nurturing. Yeah. She loved his books.
Yeah.
You know, she seemed to worship him because of his fame. It was all seemed so good. And she also was so confident in her belief that she was doing this for the right reasons.
Yeah, because she wanted him to finish writing his stupid romance novel.
And so it was absolutely terrifying. But I did find it quite a good instructive film in the sense that if you ever write romance novels that are so successful that a crazy fan takes you and locks you in her house, you do need to work your upper body strength with the typewriter.
Yes.
And you should also hoard your painkillers so that you can poison her. Yeah. That was just a good lesson.
There's good tips in that. I mean, you know, there's a romance author called Sarah Morgan.
No, really?
She's still the first Google hit because who am I and who's she? She's a massively famous multi-millionaire romance author who started off her career as doing like lower status woman, higher status man books. So it was like The Gypsy and The Neurosurgeon, like from Mills and Boone.
Right.
And now she specialises in doing Christmas-themed romances. So they're all called like Sleigh Bells in the Snow and stuff. Every Christmas you'll see around London massive posters.
By Sarah Morgan. Well, that's my Christmas Eve sorted.
It's so demoralizing. I just imagine life as being the other Sarah Morgan all the time because she's clearly very rich and sometimes people send me nice messages on Twitter and they're clearly for her. And they've asked me to go and like read at things. And it's like,
you need to take those jobs, mate.
Yeah, I want to turn up and go, like, I can read you some cat porn I wrote once.
Hello, I'm going to read you my Twitter feed.
I'm going to read you some jokes I wrote for the Judge Reinder chat show.
I want to hear them.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody does. I didn't know about Sarah. I've never experienced that because there aren't many boner-y titties out there in the world.
It's less and less. The name changes by the minute. God. Let's finish up now on my fear that you live with now. Because you said, again, it was two things you offered, and I didn't want to pick one because I'm just fascinated.
Well,
you said gum.
Yeah.
And you said FOMO.
Okay, so chewing gum is big.
Okay, and I will try and remember this because I chew gum all the time, and I'm very sorry.
Yeah, I do have you marked in my brain as a chewer.
I'm a cudder. It's really trying to look after my teeth, which are terrible. I'm very sorry.
So I was thinking about this on the way here about where this came from. And I don't know if you've seen the episode of The Simpsons where Marge is afraid of flying and she goes to a therapist to work out where it's from. And so she figures out that actually she thought her dad was a pilot, but then she goes on the plane to discover he's a flight attendant.
Daddy, where are you?
So
So, who wants a pre-flight cookie? Fig Newtons? Hydrox?
Barry!
Don't look at me! Don't look at me!
My father was a stewardess.
Marge, there's nothing to be ashamed of here. Today, male flight attendants or stewards are common.
They are?
Yes. Thanks to trailblazers like your father, you might say he was a pioneer.
Yeah. You might even say he was an American hero.
Let's not go nuts.
But then when the therapist is talking to her, she's like, actually, some other stuff is coming back now. And then she remembers, like, airplanes as food being, like, driven into her eye as a kid. And then, like, her in a little toy airplane that went on fire. And then her in the killing fields as, like, an airplane shoots at her. So basically, I think me and...
And the therapist goes, yes, it's all a rich tapestry.
Exactly. Oh, good memory, Sarah Organ.
Come for the Simpsons every time. Like, oh, recall for a Simpsons episode.
So
I was just enjoying you saying that so much, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Oh, thanks.
Sharing.
Yeah, so essentially that is my relationship with gum. So when I was little, I think my mum hated it, so she would never allow us to have it. Then I remember being made to scrape it off the back of desks at, like, summer camp. I also remember...
As a punishment or just...
No,
like
we were all supposed to be cleaning. It was our cleaning. Oh, it was an Irish language summer camp. That was the activities they thought up for us. Oh, yeah. As long as they're speaking Irish, we can get them cleaning. So is that. There was also the fact that, you know, everyone in my school said that if you swallowed it by accident, it took 18 years to go through your digestive system.
And would tangle around your liver.
I remember having 10p and going to the shop to get a 10p bag of sweets, but they actually gave me 10 bits of chewing gum, and so my mum whipped it away. The first boy I kissed was eating chewing gum at the time. So it was just sort of like one bit of gum trauma after the other. And then it was huge in my teens and 20s. So I'm a little bit more okay with it now in my 30s. But basically, like, especially when I was a teenager in secondary school, because that was like the height of physical contact, because you would just hug, you would, like, go to class and hug the friends that you were with in class, and then to class you'd hug them again before you go. Yeah. But everybody was eating chewing gum. And so it would just, oh, just the noise of it, the smell of it, it would just set my whole body on edge. And the worst is, like, if you're in a captive situation with, like, you sit down in the theatre and the stranger next to you is eating chewing gum, or you're on the train and someone's eating chewing gum. And also, my friends, when I was a teenager in college and they knew how bad it was, I would sit down to talk to them, they would remember they were eating chewing gum and then very kindly go to spit it out. But seeing someone spit it out was the worst part.
And stretching it out. I'm making it worse.
When I would see it, like, land in the napkin. And also the thing is, and also there's no good way of telling a teenager that you don't like something without them doing it more. No. So if someone's eating chewing gum and you go, I'm so sorry, I know this is really weird, but I have a phobia of chewing gum. They go, and chew it more.
Or make you talk about it for hours. Yeah.
Or show it to you or offer you some. So it's just like a weird phobia that I live with, because I'm so brave.
You are brave. But that's
so great.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah.
It is everywhere all the time. Yeah. And as you say, difficult to say to someone you're sat next to. Like, we all sat next to someone on the tube that stinks.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, that must be. What's the worst that it's been for you? Have you had to, like, move seats or?
I think I have. I have in the past. Now I just sort of. I'm more deadened after a decade in London. So now I just, like, roll my eyes and grit my teeth and put up with it.
Right.
But I think, yeah, before I would run. Sometimes when I was a teenager, a friend would come towards me and I would see that they were eating chewing gum and they had their arms outstretched to greet me. I would run away. So I would just run in the opposite direction going, sorry, gum, sorry. So it was pretty bad then.
Holy shit.
Pathetic. I mean, what a pathetic phobia. Oh, and another thing that I do is I always carry Tic Tacs. So after lunch, if I see someone reaching for their chewing gum, I just, before they put it in their mouth, I'm like, Tic Tac, mint.
That's perfect. Yeah. Yes, because I chew gum all the time because I've got terrible teeth. Dentist said chew after a meal. It's like brushing your teeth. It's
really
as good
I didn't
as
know
a,
that.
Good
I've
as
been
a thing.
Ignoring it.
And obviously, yeah, we're worried about my breath smelling. And I always have this thing, if someone offers you gum, immediately take it, because it means they're subtly trying to tell you that you stink.
So maybe if I just see someone with a packet of chewing gum, I should always preemptively offer them a Tic Tac.
Yeah, so they're better. You actually really stink a lot. I know. I mean, thank you for talking about that. That's a horrible fear to live with, and I don't know
it's
how
weird,
you deal with it.
Yeah, it's slightly better now, but there was a time where I just could not be around it whatsoever. And I do kind of live in fear that I will be cast as an actor in a role, and then on the day the director will be like, oh, actually, could you chew some gum in this scene, because I'll just have to quit.
Yeah, could you just blow a massive bubble and yeah. wink at the camera. I don't know what role this is you're applying for, like the Fonz or something.
I love that if the direction was, could you wink at the camera. I want to do more of those Phoebe yeah. Waller-Bridge Miranda Hart looks to camera.
Tell me, I mean, I couldn't possibly understand this thing. I've never come across it and never experienced it. I have such a happy, rich, fulfilling inner and outer life.
Oh,
I don't understand.
I'm so pleased for you.
The concept of missing out on what other people are doing that looks
so
better than what you're doing.
Essentially, this is just a giant personality flaw. Mm. So basically, it's fear of missing out, but I think it's probably more accurately, in my case, fear of being left out. So less FOMO, more FABLO. God, I'm good at spelling and acronyms. Basically, I discovered it a few years ago when I saw on Facebook that I went to drama school in London, went to Lambda, and I saw on Facebook that the class below me at Lambda were having a reunion for their class, and I remember thinking they could have invited me. I don't know why they didn't invite me. I think they would have really enjoyed having me there. Do you know what? I'm a bit insulted that nobody in that class thought to invite me to their class reunion. And then I kind of hovered above myself and was like, Roni, you weren't in that class, love. Like, you literally weren't in that class. They're allowed to have a reunion without you. And so it's not like, I mean, it's not like I go to every single thing I'm invited to, or I'm always the last person standing. I do like a party, but it's just that I'm a classic extrovert in that I get energy from being around other people. And I love people, so I love, you know, to see them. And so the idea that people would choose to hang out without me is just extremely offensive to the core of my being.
Yeah, I mean, I find that a baffler, why anyone would choose to have a gathering of people and not have you there.
Thank
because
you, Sarah.
Because, genuinely, that's not sarcasm. That's just a statement of fact. Why the fuck would you not have you there? I mean, you're only going to make things better. But you mentioned Facebook, because it is such a social media driven thing, and it's like it's impossible to talk yourself out of without just sounding like you're at fucking school and you're eight, and it's like
they're having a nice time with them. And another thing that I do is if I do leave something early, I need to know the next day. I need to phone someone and find out every single thing that happened after I left. I don't know what it is. I guess it is just FOMO. Like I said, it's a major personality flaw.
I'm kind of
fine with it. And one thing I hate is when people invite me to the afters of their wedding but not their actual wedding.
You're one of those people.
Yeah, because I love the ceremony part. I love the mushy I will spend my life with you and in front of all of these people part. I prefer that to the meal that is inevitably a mushroom risotto for us vegetarians. But I remember once a friend who I would consider a close friend invited me to the afters of her wedding, but not the ceremony. And I threw the invitation across the room in anger.
You're
like a drama queen.
I liked you until 5 minutes ago. Now I'm, as someone who's been through that,
I'm being emotionally
you got married?
Open. Yeah, I did. And there was loads of people I couldn't fit. And that's the fact of life. But not everybody is emotionally immature as me. So I'm sure they were fine with it.
I thought
this was a safe place.
I'm so sorry. I did. I absolutely said that at the top and everything. Yes, no, it's absolutely fine to
be that
person who resents not being invited to the admin bit of
because why wouldn't they want to have me there?
Why would they not want you to witness
I'll
their
laugh,
love?
I'll cry. That's
God.
All I'll do.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
that's the
two
things that you should be. Oh, dance. Dance is a good thing to do at a wedding.
It's true.
I feel like there's not much to say about FOMO because it's horrible to know you've caused it by accident. If someone And you're like, oh, fuck, I just... And you know that you just forgot whatever. But then if I feel FOMO, I immediately feel like the world's biggest cunt.
I immediately feel
like not only am I sad that I missed out on the thing,
I
feel like a complete dickhead 7-year-old for going,
yeah.
And the look at that. And I bet they talked about me the whole time. God, they didn't fucking talk about you. And then I turn into a golem and
yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. It's, no, it's just an absolute cycle of you know, of useless self-loathing, and no, it's not useful in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But it's there, and I just really wanted to be honest, even though you hate me now.
I don't hate you now. I love you more, and I'm going to invite you to more things. Would it be better if would you just be happy if everyone invited you to everything?
That would be fine, because then I would know that everybody loves me unconditionally, which is all I'm after.
Yeah, sure.
Is it really that much to ask that every single person in the world likes me?
No.
Thank you. Good to know.
Yes.
And I'll just go to the ones that I was going to go to anyway.
Mm. This is an angle that's just occurred to me, and you might agree or not agree. I found when I was pregnant, there is that kind of weird wall of being, you are excluded from things a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's
interesting. People either don't think to ask you to do stuff.
Yeah.
Or you sort of can go, but you can only go for a bit, and you're sort of half in and half out. And are you experiencing this at the moment as you are?
You're half.
I was invited to a lot of parties in Wendy houses.
That's what your labour is like. because I am... surprise reveal, currently pregnant. It's not a surprise for you. It's a surprise for the listeners who don't know me in any way. I'm struggling with a few things in terms of that, which is that I can't go out as much because a switch of debilitating exhaustion just flicks on at like unexpected times of the day. Sometimes it doesn't come at all. Sometimes it comes at 2 p.m., sometimes 6, sometimes 8. And so sometimes, you know, you just have to sit on that couch for 6 hours. Mm. You can't actually go out. And so things I would love to go to, I've had to say no to, which doesn't feel like me. So it feels like a... Because it's just, you're just tired. You're a bit like, you know, you've got to get through work, but then you also have to grow a lung. Yeah. For some stranger.
Two, if you're handy.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, for some stranger you haven't met yet. Yeah. It's very tiring.
It is. It's absolutely knackering. Yes. No. I was just curious if that added to any sense of like.
Well, no, I hadn't actually thought that people were leaving me out because I'm pregnant, but now I am, Sarah. So it's another thing for me to be weepy about.
God, I've done so badly here with this whole no judgment. It's a happy place to talk about fun.
Getting
things.
The guest's name right.
Getting. Oh God, this is
it's been a delight.
The annoying thing is that I picked it up straight away just by stumbling over, you know, and then I picked it up straight away. But because we've been so funny about it,
you've
been so funny about it, I now have to leave it in.
Yeah.
And I have to take that.
And we used it consistently the whole way through, so you can't edit that out.
Absolutely.
It's a runner.
Yeah. Anyway, well, my friend Bona.
Go on.
Bona cunt.
That's what it stands for. You guessed it right. Cunt is the old Irish name for angel. Very, very old Irish that even Irish scholars won't have heard of. It's been such a pleasure, Treasure.
Bona, thank you so much for this. Bye, listeners.
The important thing is that we've pinpointed the precise moment when you developed your fear of flying.
Wait, some other stuff's coming back to me.
Open wide, here comes the airplane. This is what a cornfield looks like, honey.
Those things could also have contributed to my fear of flying?
Yes, yes, it's all a rich tapestry.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.